And episode number 31 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast is brought to you by number two, Derek Jeter, number two.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
All right, it's not really brought to you by Derek Jeter, but if you've been following me on any of the social networks, I can't remember if we've actually posted this to the Pinstripe Lanes social networks. We're at Pinstripe Lanes. We did, yes, have a very quick encounter on the red carpet of the Turn 2 Foundation Gala on Monday here downtown with Derek Jeter and his sister, Charlie. Of course, she's the president of the organization. We're going to get to that conversation in just a second. I'm Ralphie Aversa. I know it's been a minute. I don't know where to begin. Cousin Tony, though, Tony Restaino's here. Seriously, the last time we taped an episode of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast, you were on it, Anth. We were taping it from the deck of the house we rented in Cooperstown. It was the night before we met Mariano Rivera. Maybe we should start there.
Yeah, it sounds like a good place to start.
Because you were the one actually that coordinated the whole Mo meet and greet that we had at 7th Inning Stretch on Main Street in beautiful, scenic downtown Cooperstown. So the day after the induction, they did a round table or something. What was that called that we had tickets to, but we didn't go to it?
Yes, there was a round table discussion with all of the inductees. And I'm trying to remember who the host was of it.
Peter Gammons
was the host of the round table. Mm-hmm. And we were going to go to that. And then shortly right after that, we were going to go to the Mo meet and greet. The roundtable was actually supposed to be held at Doubleday Field, and at some point leading up to the weekend, they ended up changing it to the athletic complex right where the induction was the day before.
Yeah, and it was raining outside, so the little inclement as far as the weather, so that probably was one of the reasons why they switched it. Nonetheless, they switched it. We got there, and we knew that we were going to be kind of cutting it close to go there and then get out of the traffic there, get downtown, and then get in line for Mariano, especially considering we had to be there a little earlier because Mr. Restaino bought the VIP package. So what exactly was the VIP package?
The VIP package was supposed to, it was good for one autograph.
Mm-hmm.
You could take a photograph with Mo, with yourself, three guests, and Mariano. And you were supposed to have some, I guess the way it was billed was you'd have about 10 to 15 minutes of time with them just to kind of, you know, hang out, ask some questions, stuff like that.
Basically, they said, look, it's not going to be like a meet and greet where you get your photo, you get rushed through, you don't get to say hi to them or anything. Like they said, you'll have a few minutes, you can chat with them, you can ask them a few questions. It's not going to be rushed. It'll be in a relaxed setting, so on and so forth. So that was part of the allure to spending the extra money, that you got a professional photo, and then you got to bring, it was the person getting the autograph, and then they got to bring three people. And obviously, we had four people in our party at Cooperstown, so it worked out great. We all were able to get our photo with Mo. What ended up happening, though, was not exactly what was promised. One of the big things that happened in between the time that the signing was announced and the time that the signing happened was, of course, the fact that Steiner Sports was bought out by Fanatics. And when Fanatics purchased the Steiner Sports inventory, I didn't realize it, but they also purchased all of the player contracts. Now, some of those have continued on, like Mariano. Some of those have not, I believe, like our guest that we're going to have on in a little bit, Derek Jeter. The Mariano one did, though, and so this went from a Steiner 7th Inning Stretch event to a Fanatics 7th Inning Stretch event. And our first, for both of us, our first time doing a Fanatics live event, or at least a live event that Fanatics was a part of in some way. I'll speak to this because I have no problem saying it. The experience was, I'm not going to say that it was bad. I think the biggest thing, it was unorganized, A. We ended up, you know, Mariano was on time. He actually might have even been a little early. But the whole setup inside the store, getting people in and out, getting the VIP tickets taken care of, the calling of the numbers, The whole just workflow of the place, from where you waited in line to where you dropped off your item to where you got the photo to where you then picked up your item and any other certificates of authenticity or so on and so forth that you purchased. The whole workflow was just completely unorganized, poorly designed, poorly produced. Mariano couldn't have been nicer, but we were definitely rushed. It wasn't what we were sold on. And so while it was great, we got a beautiful photo, which is the thumbnail art for this episode over at pinstripelanespodcast.com and on all of our social networks at Pinstripe Lanes. And the photo came out great. And your autograph, I should say, also came out great.
Yes. No, the photo came out awesome. Mo signed for me a piece of the old Yankee Stadium wall. Beautiful signature, classic Mariano signature. He was great. I mean, even though we were kind of rushed, I mean, we did get to talk to him a little bit, ask him a few questions.
Couldn't
complain about that. Mo was Mo. He was awesome. I don't know, Ralphie, who though was responsible, I guess, for organizing this event. I don't know. I don't know if Fanatics really had a lot to do with the organization of it, since they came in kind of last minute. When this thing was first built, it was built as a Steiner with seventh inning stretch.
Yes.
I got to be honest with you. I have a feeling it's probably was more of a Steiner setup, just with the name change. And, you know, and the folks that were working, they tried to do a good job. And I know it's a busy weekend there. It's chaotic. It's hectic. But the execution of it was just... it was just poorly done.
Yeah.
Very, very, very poorly done. And the amazing thing is you would think that based on some of the other larger autograph signings down in Cooperstown that weekend, you would kind of take a page out of their playbook and run it the same way, because the MAB run, the MAB run event couldn't have been better.
Yeah. MAB obviously is the other big live autograph company. They have deals with a number of different athletes, or sometimes they'll collaborate with other agents, other managers to bring athletes in that maybe they don't have a contract with. And they do a big show the entire weekend of Cooperstown every year. And Anthony did attend that as well and got a number of different autographs. And that, you know, MAB, they're at the point where it's a well-oiled machine. But I think moving forward, The one thing I just wanted to touch on real quick was the price point for an MAB compared to the price point for the Steiner seventh inning stretch, and now what will be a, you know, any Fanatic stuff moving forward if it involves Mo. And you got to think, obviously, with Derek probably getting inducted next year, that Mo will be back and maybe he'll do another signing there. Again, did we talk about how much we paid?
We did.
All right, yeah. Oh, we did in the last episode. Okay, so it was that long ago. It was a couple months ago. I know, we've been on hiatus. We may get to why in a minute. But anyways, we paid $1,000 for that. Again, you were supposed to get a few minutes with Mo, which we didn't get. But we did get a beautiful photo. Anth had a piece of the old Yankee Stadium wall, as he mentioned. Beautiful signature from Mariano. Included the Hall of Fame inscription as well, which was nice. $1,000 out the door, bing, bang, boom. What was the most expensive autograph at MAB, and who was it?
You know what, Ralph? I mean, let's put it like this. I think, you know, between Ricky Henderson and Frank Thomas, I don't know. I think maybe those guys charged $100 for a flat, whereas if, you know, to get Mo's autograph, forget about the VIP package, just if you wanted to get his autograph on a flat, I believe it was $500.
Right, exactly. And so that's what, as we like to say, to paraphrase our buddy Mike Francesa, what worries you a little bit moving forward with this is, as some of these Yankees, and a lot of the Yankees now, I mean, Judge, Stanton, you know, I know this is way down the line, but even it's current, it's happening currently too, because Fanatics is doing live events with the current Yankee players as well, along with some of the ones that have retired that they have deals with. And I think, you know, Steiner at times was pricey, but for the most part, outside of this event, it was never exorbitant. MAB has always been very well done, but I think Fanatics is going to bring this to a level where a lot of fans are going to be priced out, and it's disheartening. You know, I feel for, like, I'm thankful that you know, we're a little older and we can, you know, afford to spend that money if we need to, because, you know, we have bills, but we don't have kids yet or anything like that. You know, I feel bad for a mom or a dad who's got a teenager that wants to get an autograph from an Aaron Judge, and they're going to have to go through Fanatics, and they're just going to pay, you know, out the rear. It's sad. It really is.
It is. It's crazy. And fortunately for us, our generation of players, you know, that we followed, either we've had the opportunity to meet them, you know, while we were growing up, get an autograph, what have you, mm-hmm. at a reasonable price. I agree with you, though. Going forward, you know, a kid that wants an Aaron Judge autograph, I mean,
yeah, good luck.
Have fun.
Yeah. You might as well, you know, maybe you go to Toronto and you stake out the Park Hyatt.
There you go.
That's what we did to get Derek Jeter's autograph, matter of fact. And you will hear from El Capitan. We may even tell that story, you know, because we got a couple of interesting stories, one of which I unearthed this week on Facebook about meeting Derek the very first time I came to New York City. Anthony was actually here, too, for that as well. We're going to take a quick little break. When we come back, you will hear about and hear from El Capitan, Derek Jeter, here on episode number 31 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. All right, welcome back to episode number 31 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Ralph Iaversa, cousin Tony Restaino is here as well. He was on our last episode that we taped back at the end of July. It was the night before we met Mariano Rivera, which of course we just told you all about. Without further ado, actually, we can get to our Jeter stories in a second, but because we've been teasing it for a minute, thanks to my friend Shayna, who runs a website called The Nocturnal, I covered the Turn 2 Foundation Gala at Cipriani Wall Street downtown here in the city on Monday, featuring, of course, an appearance from Derek Jeter. Very interesting, by the way. The only other baseball player that I saw there was John Franco. Also, fun fact, Anth, John Franco's wife asked me to take a photo of the two of them on the red carpet.
Oh, so, nice. How'd you do?
I think I did well. John didn't post it to his Instagram. Her Instagram is private, and I don't want to request to follow her because that'd be kind of weird. But I think I did good. I think I did well.
Nicely produced.
So John Franco came by. So a couple other athletes, Larry Johnson, John Starks. Obviously, it was Monday, so you had the Yankees. If any, you know, former players who are advisors to the GM, they weren't going to be there. And same with obviously any current players, because they were in Minnesota getting ready to sweep the Twins. No other Yankees that I saw there. I was surprised, though, that Derek, not only did he walk the carpet and do media, but he did so solo without his sister, Charlie. Super surprised about that, because, you know, normally when you do a red carpet and you have a high profile public figure who maybe is only trying to get asked a certain set of questions, they will do media with somebody else, because then it makes it a lot harder for them to be singled out. For example, like, you know, I don't know if you saw the Page Six story. I was standing right, you know, basically right next to the woman from Page Six who was interviewing Jeter. But because he was doing the interview solo, this reporter from Page Six started asking Derek about, you know, the Savages and, you know, that whole nickname, and did they have any nicknames? And Jeter kind of threw a friendly jab at the current Yankees because they have that nickname. Then it turned into a Page Six article. Stuff like that is a lot harder to do, would have been harder for that reporter to ask had Jeter been doing media with Charlie. But she was right behind him. He was walking up the carpet alone. And he stopped for me, and I got to ask him two questions. Here they are.
Hey, Derek, in the 23-year run of this organization, what's been the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge?
For running this organization, for this foundation.
Oh, man, I think it's all challenging. But I think, you know, the most difficult thing, I think, for most foundations is raising money. But, you know, these events like this, I mean, they're extremely important, because this is where we raise money to continue with our programs moving forward. And the more money you raise, the more kids you're able to have an impact on. So I think that's a challenge, but we've been very fortunate.
As you've transitioned into the front office, how, if at all, has it impacted your involvement with the organization?
With
Turn 2.
Oh, no, I'm still, no. No, I'm still very,
I mean, maybe it's helped because maybe you have more time or maybe you have less time. I don't know.
Well, no, it's you're still extremely involved with the foundation. But I think also what we're doing down in Miami is, you know, our reimagined foundation we have with the Marlins as well. It's very important to give back. And you know, the Yankee organization has done that for years. And you know, if you have that platform, you should take advantage of it and try to help out as many people as possible.
Thanks, Derek.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. Thanks, Anthony. No problem. There you go. You got to see the video, Anth. What'd you think of El Capitan? He was nice enough, right?
Yeah, no, I thought it was awesome. He, you know, he answered the questions. He, you know, it's I don't know, mixed feeling. It's been weird seeing him recently as he's been involved with the Marlins organization, and I feel like there's been a little bit of a distancing himself from the Yankees. But it is what it is. We'll see him in July.
Yeah, we're obviously going back to Cooperstown for the induction. Very excited for that, obviously, after just really an all-around great trip, which you got to hear about in the last episode. Should we tell the Park Hyatt story?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so the Yankees, I don't know if they still do, but they used to stay at the Park Hyatt in Toronto. And obviously, Anthony and I are both from Niagara Falls, New York, and the closest MLB stadium was Sky Dome, now Rogers Center. We still call it Sky Dome, though, in downtown Toronto. And so we would go to a lot of games, a lot of Yankee games at Sky Dome. And sometimes we would be fortunate enough, our parents would book rooms at the Park Hyatt where the Yankees were staying, which gave us a nice advantage because what is going on here? Is that Brett Carter?
I think it was.
Getting ready for this Houston series or what? I don't know if you can hear in the background. Somebody's hammering here in the apartment or somewhere near the apartment. Yeah, Brett Gardner. Let Brett bang. So our parents, you know, we're fortunate enough. They would book rooms sometimes at the Park Hyatt. So we'd stay there overnight, go to a couple games, and then try to get some Yankee autographs. It was one, I believe it was a Sunday. It was a Saturday or Sunday day game. I want to say it was a Sunday. Because we were there, I guess it could have been a Saturday. We could have gone up Friday night. It was a day game on a weekend. This is back. What year was this? Oh, geez. I mean, we're young. Are we even in high school at this point?
Maybe just started. It had to be 99.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. So.
Maybe 2000.
You sure it wasn't a little later? You don't think it might have been like 03, 02 or 03?
Not when the. Well, it depends what time. I mean, we went there so many different times.
I know we did. We went there a lot. Anyways, so we're there. We're at the Park Hyatt, and there's a steakhouse inside the hotel where a lot of the players either would, you know, if they had like a 4 o'clock game, they'd go back to the steakhouse. They'd have a late dinner. If they had a 1 o'clock game, they'd go there for like an early breakfast, and then they'd get on the team bus. And obviously, there's two different team buses that go over to the stadium. And then, you know, some players will just cab it or, you know, I guess now they Uber it probably. But anyways, so we're waiting outside. There's a sizable crowd outside of the exit from the restaurant, which is separate from the hotel, because Jorge Posada and Derek Jeter are in there having breakfast before they're about to walk out right onto the team bus, which is parked right outside there, and go over to Sky Dome for the game that day. So there's a number of people lined up. There's barriers. And Jeter and Posada finish up. They both walk out. Everybody goes crazy. And everybody starts trying to get Jeter's autograph. Now, Anthony, you had a really cool item you were trying to get signed, right?
Yes. Yeah, I had a old Sports Illustrated. I think it was a 1997 Sports Illustrated. It had A-Rod and Jeter on the cover. A-Rod was in his Mariners uniform. And so I had the Sports Illustrated with the Rodriguez autograph, and I wanted to get Jeter to sign it, you know, to have them both on it.
Right. So Anthony has now, you know, we're autograph pros at this point. We've gone to a number of different shows. We've chased down athletes, airports, hotels, the whole thing, stadiums, everywhere.
Let me just say, though, that we're pros, I guess, in the sense that we started when we were how old? Probably 12.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, that's what I'm
saying. Maybe even younger.
At this point, we're like, even though we're young, like
16,
we're like
16, 17.
Vets.
Right.
And the reason why I preface the comments I'm about to make with that is because Anthony, not only does he have, you know, like the one thing you got to do is you got to have a good working pen, whether it's a Sharpie, whether it's a silver paint pen, whether it's a blue ballpoint for a baseball, you got to have a good working pen. The other thing you got to do is you got to make sure, depending on the setting that you're getting this signed in, that you have a good surface or some type of steady hold or grip on the item so that whoever is signing the item can do so legibly, or at least in whichever, you know, do so neatly rather. Anthony has a, what is it, 3-inch binder?
No, it was just a clipboard.
Or 1-inch? Oh, it was just a clipboard. Clipboard. Oh, it was just a clipboard.
Clipboard with the magazine on top. Keep it simple.
Gonna hurt either way. So he's got the magazine, and he's got a clipboard behind it, so that if Jeter signs, he's got a flat kind of, you know, rigid surface behind there that he can put his signature on it. So Jeter comes out. Everyone goes crazy. He starts signing autographs. Anthony's pumped. Anthony starts yelling, "Mr. Jeter, the magazine! Mr. Jeter, the magazine!" Anthony, at this point,
he's moving down the line, you know, along the barricade. He's moving down the line. So as he's moving, I'm kind of moving with him, and, you know, I'm holding the magazine out and what have you. And, well, as the story goes, I tried to continue to move down the line and kind of lift the clipboard up, you know, over people.
Yeah,
and
there was a couple people, one in particular, that were in Anthony's way as he was trying to sign, as Jeter was going down the line signing autographs. And so Anthony was trying to get on the other side of this person, reached up, tried to clear the clipboard over this person's head, and instead put the corner of the clipboard directly into the person's head. That person, nah, wasn't just a patron. Wasn't a hotel employee. No, wasn't anyone who resided in Canada. It was actually somebody with the Yankees. It was their head of security at the time, Jerry Lavoroni. What did Lavoroni do exactly when you nailed him, buried him in the head with the corner of a clipboard?
Well, he was not very happy, to say the least. He took the clipboard from my hand. Walked away with it. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if it was being confiscated or what.
Right.
I can't even remember what he said, because I felt, obviously, you know, I was a kid. I was 14, 15. I felt really, obviously felt really bad. I just hit this guy in the head with the clipboard.
You also, let's face it.
And I was a little bummed. I obviously at that point was not getting the Jeter.
Right.
Autograph.
Yes, exactly. You were bummed about that too.
You know, it was all those feelings going on. And he took the clipboard with the magazine, walked away with it. Eventually he came back and gave it back to me, and I apologized to him, and he was nice about it. He was like,
yeah, oh, I think you had to go to hotel security, I think, to get the magazine back. I feel like he got on the bus then after he handed it to someone at the hotel, and then he got on the bus. Jeter obviously, I think, stopped signing shortly after this incident as well, and he got on the bus also. You get the magazine back, and then we go to the game that day, and Anthony, who was crying when this happened. Yes, you were.
Was I crying?
You were crying. And I'll tell you why, the reason why you were crying in a second. But you felt so bad about it that when we got to the ballpark, you sought out Mr. Lavoroni, walked down to the dugout and apologized. And he accepted your apology. He was rather gracious about it.
He did graciously accept the apology.
You were crying because you knew
Let's edit this out, Ralph. We don't need to talk about me crying on the podcast.
No, it was the end of an era. You weren't like bawling, but you knew that you know, we had spent our time as kids getting all these autographs, and it was always like, oh, the kids are getting autographs, whatever. And like, finally, this was kind of like that moment where it was like, you know, we're not really kids per se anymore.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, I mean, of the kids there, we're like the older kids.
Older kids, right.
And like, you know, it's, but anyways, the story does have a happy ending.
Yes, it does.
Because Anthony gets the magazine back, and the next day, what does he do? He gives it to my younger sister, Raquella. And Raquel comes through, waits in that same spot outside of the restaurant. Jeter comes out, signs autographs, puts a signature on the piece. Was recently verified by, what was the company?
JSA.
JSA. Just got the JSA DNA verification on it as well. So nicely produced. And a nice little piece for the collection, a nice little story. We really have Brett Gardner's construction company here doing work in a neighboring apartment we tape this podcast.
You know what's funny, Ralph? When you thinking back to that, you know, that that experience that we had getting autographs at that game, mm-hmm. that weekend, you're right. I mean, that was the last time I ever, and I don't know about you, but that's the last time I ever, I think, tried to get a signature at a stadium. And I think at that time I was probably 14.
Yeah.
14, maybe 15. And ever since then, it was more or less just, you know, go to a show and got to pay for it. Forget getting the free autograph, but you know, who knows that?
The only, well, I'll tell you, what has almost brought me out of retirement and what I think will is the 09 piece that I'm working on that I need Jeter's signature on, obviously. And I know you have a piece you need Jeter on as well, but not for Jeter. Cause I think at some point we're going to be able to pay and get his, we're going to pay probably too much, but we're going to be able to pay and get his autograph at some point. On my 09 piece, I need Cano and I need Melky Cabrera. And I feel like those are two guys where if I time it right at a ballpark, I'll be able to get both of them, I think. So that may bring me out of retirement, but we shall see. I did not get Jeter's signature, by the way, when I met him in August of 1998, my first ever trip to New York City. Anthony and his family had come as well. Although I don't know, I think you were in the city when we had landed at that point. I think, or maybe you were getting here the next day. You might have been getting here the next day, and I think your Uncle Bob was already here. Yes, that's what happened. Because we went to the game, my family and Uncle Bob and everyone, we went to the game that Thursday night, and I was telling them that I met Jeter that night, and then you guys came in on Friday, you and your dad.
That's right.
So first ever trip to the city, August, I believe it's 27th, 1998. And again, at the time, we're collecting autographs, so I bring with me a duffel bag. My carry-on on the airplane has a baseball, a mini basketball, a mini football, a hockey puck, and a number of wrestling-related items as well. I wanted to be prepared for any athlete that I might run into from the four major sports. And then also that weekend, it was WWF, at the time, SummerSlam at Madison Square Garden, Stone Cold against The Undertaker.
That's right.
Highway to Hell.
That's it.
So so we get to the city, we land, we take a cab in, we're staying at the Hilton in Midtown. We grab our bags, come up to the room, and I go to grab my duffel bag to bring it with us, and my parents start yelling at me because they're like, you're not going to carry around a duffel bag in the biggest city in the world as we walk around your very first time. You're going to get tired. You're not going to want to carry it. You're not going to run into anyone anyways. You don't need to carry it. There was a bit of an argument in the hotel room. Finally, I relented and I said, all right, fine, I won't bring it. First place we go, we walk to 55th and 5th, where the old Nike Town was. They just recently, actually, on 5th Avenue, opened up a new store, which, Anthony, we should probably go to while you're here. It's really cool, called the House of Innovation. Really cool stuff. Anyways, so the old Nike Town, right around the corner from Trump Tower. And we go there, and we, you know, cruise, we browse around. Obviously, like, I'm wide-eyed. I'm in the city for my first time. You know, FAO Schwartz was still open at the time. That's nearby. The Apple store, I don't know if that was open or not, but obviously that's nearby in the same vicinity. And we, whatchamacallit. So we're getting ready to leave Nike Town to kind of continue our shopping. And my mom overhears an employee at the store say, man, that Derek Jeter's really tall. She turns and she says, what'd you say? And he goes, oh yeah, Derek Jeter's here. So that I'm like, I'm with my mom at that time. My dad and my sister are together. They're behind us. And I'm like, where is he? And the guy's like, he's on the fifth floor checking out at customer service. I'd hurry though. So I sprint. I sprint to customer service, up the escalators, to the fifth floor, to the back. Lo and behold, El Capitan with a lady friend there. They had an away game the night before. He had scored the winning run the night before, actually. And there he is. And I'm like, well, I don't have a baseball, but I'm going to go up and talk to him. So I walk up to him. I say, Mr. Jeter, hi, my name's Ralph Aversa. I'm from Niagara Falls, New York. I'm in New York City for my first time. I came here just to see you play at Yankee Stadium because I've never been. I've seen you in Toronto. Congratulations on scoring the game winning run. Anthony, and you've heard the story a few times. He couldn't have been nicer. Like, it's so funny how those like little small interactions leave a big impact on you. And thank goodness he wasn't a jerk to me, because I don't know how I would have handled it at that age. And I don't know if it would have. I think I still would have been a Yankee fan, but I wouldn't have held him in the high regard that I did. And so, yeah, he couldn't have been nicer. He's asking me questions. He's intent, whatever. So then we, you know, wrap up. I say goodbye because, you know, I felt weird. I didn't want to bug him. And I walk away. By this point, as I'm walking back to the elevators, the rest of my family has caught up. And so I tell him, and we kind of hang out there for a second. He walks out because he had got done. And interesting, they didn't have like a secret entrance for him. He went in and out of Nike Town from the front entrance. And so before he gets on the elevator, my mom stops him and snaps the photo that maybe you've seen me share before in this past week on social media of he and I were standing right there by the elevator, and then eventually got him to sign it in Toronto, that photo. Threw it up into an 8x10. So pretty cool moment. I mean, you know, I'm in New York, not even 2 hours from my very first time, and I meet Derek Jeter as a kid going into eighth grade with the little, I don't know what that mustache was, but.
Yeah, the stash.
Yeah, it had something going on
the
there.
The Giambi stash. Hey, the funny thing about that picture is I remember it being at your house in your room in prominent position on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that picture's, it's just an awesome picture.
Yeah.
Always has from day one. Great story to go along with it. Really cool.
Yeah.
I wish I was there with you for it.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of crazy. It was crazy to tell your uncle and the whole fam. I remember your cousin, Danielle, being a little jealous, to say the least.
She loved Derek Jeter.
And honestly, I kind of think, even when I was telling you that next day, there was kind of this like hint of disbelief in the air. Like, did he really meet Derek Jeter? Like, is he embellishing this story? And then, you know, thank goodness for my mother. I say that all the time, but thank goodness for Rachel. Because she's the one. If without her, I wouldn't have had that photo. And that photo, it's such a good photo.
It's an awesome
photo.
Like,
it came out great.
The best.
One other quick story about the photo, then we're going to wrap up.
It's crazy how young you and him both look in that picture.
Yeah. Well, you know, my father, when he worked with your dad at the city and was the director of water for the city of Niagara Falls, which I tell people all the time, the coolest title my dad has ever had, to say he was the director of water for Niagara Falls. But he ran the water plant there, and he had that photo on his desk, and people who didn't watch the Yankees would walk into his office and go, oh, are those your two sons?
I'm sure he loved that.
He did love it, actually. Oh, yeah. He loves telling that story, I think, more than I love telling that the story I just told. But so, yeah, thank goodness for Derek being nice then and being nice now. Appreciate that. Thanks to Shayna, by the way, and everyone at the Nocturnal for having me. Because of them, we got to have Giancarlo Stanton on the podcast earlier this season. You think we'll have Giancarlo on the postseason roster here? They haven't. We're taping this Friday late morning, and we haven't seen anything yet about a roster for tomorrow night's game. Obviously, we won't see. I think they have until tomorrow morning to post the roster. So Giancarlo Stanton, is he on the roster?
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Hicks, is he on the roster?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. Cameron Maben, is he on the roster?
Should be.
Okay. Well, you could say yes, but then here's what you're going to have to say no to if you say yes to all of those. Luke Voit, is he on the roster?
They're going to have a tough call. The Hicks news came out of nowhere yesterday.
It really did.
So
yeah.
I mean, if he's not ready to go, I don't think he really needs. He probably shouldn't be on the roster.
Yeah,
for the ALCS. Now watch. I'm going to be like Mike. I'm going to say that he's going to play Saturday night and hit a grand slammer.
Yeah, but look, I'm with you. I don't want Hicks. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. This team, and I know they've done so good throughout the year with the replacements coming in and people coming in and out of the lineup. I get that. I understand that. And everybody's contributed. But I just feel like you're in the playoffs. You're in a groove right now. You just dominated a 100-plus win team, a team that set the record for most home runs in a season. You just dominated them in three games, which I know the Yankees have always done with the Twins, but still. I the only change I really want to see is I want CC in and maybe Lions out. Other than that, I really don't want to see any other change, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Hicks will probably be on the roster, and we'll see who the casualty is. It should be interesting. Obviously, the Yankees will be in Houston for games 1 and 2. They come back home for Tuesday, Wednesday, and if necessary, Thursday. All of those tickets are on sale. I will wrap up, too, by just saying I was at game 1 of the DS last Friday night, did a standing room only, stood at the Toyota Terrace. They got rid of the Asian bows, which I'm not happy about. But if you're a grilled cheese fan, they now do grilled cheeses out there that, you know, I didn't do it, but it smelled delicious. Raucous atmosphere. I could do without the beer throwing at the stadium. Like, I mean, I get it. You know, we all want to pretend it's Tino Martinez Grand Slam World Series, but it's not. It's the American League Division Series, so maybe we save the beer showers for, you know, a really, really big iconic moment. But other than that, the crowd was fantastic. And obviously, if you read the article by, I believe, Mark Carrig in The Athletic, those pitchers were shook a little bit. those Twins pitchers. I think they were shook a little bit by the big bad crowd up in the Boogie Down Bronx. So we'll root on the Yankees. We'll probably be at Foley's where we were last night with our other friend Meredith Marakovitz. But that's a story for another time. Anth, we're probably going to have to tape one more podcast at some point or another because you and I also went to LA during our hiatus to go see the Yankees play the Dodgers. So we'll talk about that and much more in our next episode. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for rating and reviewing and subscribing wherever you get podcasts. I'm Ralph Iaversa. He's Tony Restaino. And this was episode number 31 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast.